You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 154th episode, we talk about this week's comics, and in this week's spotlight, James talks about Asterix in Britain. Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm Jane.
That was slick.
It was. That was almost like we've been doing this for fucking ages.
Yeah, first time, straight out of the box.
Out the box. back of the net.
Absolutely.
Jurassic Park.
What does that mean?
Damn.
What? What are you? Are you just doing partridgeisms now?
Oh yeah.
Eat our goal.
But you have to, don't you?
It is a bit of a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
What have you guys been up to? Have you had a good week?
I've had a very good week. I've changed my VOD provider. Very pleased about that.
Who have you changed to?
I've changed to Netflix.
That's the biggest thing you're going to talk about for your week.
All right, I reduced my mobile phone bill by two-thirds.
It's your cold, lonely face you should be talking about. I know listener can't see.
That's not a big deal for me. I've shaved before, I'll shave again.
But it looks so weird.
But the hair is already growing back. I shaved my beard off. But it's already growing back.
I've already
back.
Forgotten
Look.
That you had a beard.
Yeah. It's really fucking with Jane's brain.
Because I'm not used to it. It's just your top lip.
I'm not used to it. It's a bit weird, like, because I forgot I used to, like, sucking my top lip. Now there's no hair to suck on there now. I can't extract lunch particles anymore.
It'll grow back.
Yeah, but I'm going to wait until I'm going to do November this year, so I'm going to keep clean shaven until...
It's a long time. That's a long way off.
Only a month.
Is it only a month, November?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my goodness.
Just over, it'll go quick enough.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited.
And to be fair, I'm on holiday for a week of that. Which
means you're
going to
shave too, Nick?
Yeah.
Oh, double spinning.
But I'll set my, maybe this weekend I'll set my thingy up.
Oh, your November account.
And then.
Maybe. You won't.
What are you going to go for?
No, I've got nothing on Sunday.
Oh, right,
I'm just
going to
wear a full walrus zapata.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
The thing I really
want to say is, what about you, Jane? Have you shaved any?
Oh, God.
But I'm not going to say that because it's inappropriate. So what have you been up to, Jane? I assume James has done. I assume that's... There's only so much a week you can fit in, isn't there?
Two-thirds of my mobile phone bill's been cut by. It's a real weight off my shoulders.
Well done.
Well, I can buy more comics now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done.
We're shaking hands,
yeah,
listening,
well
because you can't see that.
That was a good deal.
Yeah.
I haven't been up to very much this week.
Okay. That's good.
I just wish she told us that in her outside voice, not her.
Oh, I haven't been up to very much this week.
Yeah, but now I feel sorry for the listener that turned it up to hear what you're saying. Now you've blown their ears out.
I'm sure they're fine.
I'm sure they'll blame you.
Blown their ears out. Been watching a lot of In Between Us too on my VOD service.
You're with Netflix now, aren't you?
Yeah.
I watched Apocalypse Now over two nights because we watched the...
redo.
Yeah.
And it's long.
It's 3 hours, 16 minutes.
It's all about the journey.
It really breaks the flow of the film, but I love that the French plantation scene
is back, isn't it? It
does really badly
jar
the flow of the film.
It does jar, but it is a good scene.
Have you seen it before?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times. And the scene with the Playboy bunny girls as well.
Oh, when they find them at
that's weird.
Camp. That's horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
It's not... But it's,
I could have lived without that being added back into
there's
the film.
I've seen a couple of Vietnam films and they all just focus on the jungle, everything makes you go insane. There's nothing, you know, war has an element of insanity about it because of what you're doing. You have to detach yourself from what you're doing and that can
to the point where you don't know you're pregnant.
Yes.
I discovered this week, the thing I discovered this week, that Cineworld when you use Orange's buy one, get one free thing on a 3D film, still charge you the extra, the difference between a normal cinema ticket and a 3D ticket.
Well, that's tantamount to theft.
Which seems really wrong to me if the 3D ticket price, that's just the ticket price, isn't it? They're charging you, like, however much it is, two or three extra quid. But that's just the price of the ticket. So if it's buy one, get one free, then you get the second ticket free. You don't pay an extra two and a half. The Cineworld Twitter account got back to me and said, no, it's always been like that. Which I guess is another reason why I am going to try never to watch any fucking 3D films again. And if cinemas choose to make it impossible to watch a film in 2D... I guess I'll just stop watching films at the cinema. That's kind of what I've decided. I don't mind paying the extra little bit of money for it if I have to, but I'm not going to like be fucked around on a buy one, get one free option. Sorry, I wasn't that pissed off about it last night. I'm actually quite pissed off about it now.
I think it's such good value now that you don't get the cool Ray-Ban glasses for free.
No. Well, did you ever? They used to charge. They used to whack up the price of the ticket, though.
Yeah, the tickets used
to be that extra little bit more expensive.
It always makes me feel like I should be playing a saxophone while I'm watching 3D films.
It's possible
with a trilby on.
It's possible that you're misunderstanding what the nature. It's possible you're misunderstanding what the nature of the word free actually is.
Do, 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 do.
Because in those particular cases, if you went there with a pair of glasses that you'd already had before, you still had to pay the full ticket price.
They do look quite cool, don't they?
Well, yeah, but you just keep the first pair they give you. You don't need a new pair every time.
Well, no, it's nice, though, isn't it?
You just got a collection of 3D glasses at
home. I like to collect things.
Also, I finally got to listen to a Blast Shield Down podcast I hadn't listened to because I hadn't seen the film. Because, you know, they talk in depth about the film. I watched a film called The Fall by Tarsem Singh from about 4 or 5 years ago. It is amazing.
On Love Film, isn't it?
It might be.
Oh, no, it is, yeah. Did you get it on a disc?
Yes, yes, that's where I got it from. I'd forgotten. Because we are on Love Film. Oh, I watched Rampart this week as well from Love Film, and it was amazing. Really good film. But The Fall is one of the best films I've seen in the last few years. And it's the only thing I've seen that's made me kind of want an even bigger TV, which I always kind of want, but also a Blu-ray player. I've been quite happy with DVD, but watching that film, I'm thinking, man, you know, that I should have seen that with a really good setup.
I got really excited the other day, actually. Scarlett started banging around against the front of my TV.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I was like, don't do that. And then, obviously, going through my mind is, hold on, she breaks that.
We have to get a new one.
We make a claim on the insurance. I get a new, much bigger TV.
Does active baby count?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I think if Scarlett smashes it, it's accidental damage.
Oh.
She doesn't know what she's doing.
No, that's true. That
even
that, or
I'll just kick it off the side and go, oh, I just fell off.
Hmm.
And that's accidental.
I feel a little bit like I just decided I was going to talk about my week, but because Jane said that she didn't really do very much, but I don't know if you were leading into saying that you'd done stuff this week.
No, I've just remembered about Apocalypse Now.
Oh.
Great film. I genuinely love Apocalypse Now.
I haven't seen it in ages.
It's really, you have to be in the mood and set aside an awful lot of time.
Mm.
Although I'm really disappointed you had time to watch Apocalypse Now redo and not Once Upon a Time in America, Jane.
We watched over 2 nights, Apocalypse Now.
We could have done that with Once Upon a Time in America.
We weren't in the right mood. We've had Apocalypse Now from Love Film for a while now, and it was the time to watch it.
I have it.
It's because we watched. We finished watching The Pacific as well.
Mm. You had watched a lot of war.
Yeah, lots of. And there's a Thin Red Line to go next.
Well, so. I watched The Specific.
Once upon a time
in America, Jane, of course, is the porn version of
it
that
is,
film.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No, you're not America, Jane. You're England, Jane. I guess if you were going to be a Jane.
Why do you have to use my name?
Which origin? Because he said "Once upon a time in America, Jane," and
I didn't hear James say that.
I know it's easier not to listen.
I saw a friend of mine who paid Jane a lovely compliment yesterday.
Did she take it well?
I'll tell you what the compliment is later and you'll find out why. That's such a funny question.
It's an off-podcast thing.
It is. He was very crude. I was very cross with him.
The listener might be amused or bewildered to find that there are actually things we choose not to say on the podcast.
And they'd also be really quite appalled with my friend, and they should be. But he's an estate agent and he can't help it.
James,
it's in their nature.
To be fair, if they heard the way you talk when you're not on record, or me,
I'm quite crude.
Yes, we have our moments.
I still want to do that crude off with the.
I just don't think it's a good idea. Guys. I don't think you guys have really thought it through. You're all like excited about this like weird punk idea that you can still be punk rock at your ages, but you've got like jobs. You want people to like you, and
do you know what the best thing about the last 2 weeks of my working life has been? Is me and my small team are over. On the opposite side of the office from everyone else, so there's like a corridor separating us, so we're well away. My favourite thing over the last couple of weeks is I've been able to say the C word without anyone worrying at work. I love it. I've just been saying it.
Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas. You're a flipping Christmas. What did you ask me? What a silly Christmas you are. I loved it. And then on Monday I have to go and sit with the grown-ups again, and I don't really want to do that.
Do you, it's one of those funny things about those situations sometimes. I don't know if you ever had this when you were a kid, or you, Jane, but there are those funny moments sometimes as an adult where you end up in a situation that feels similar to being at the children's table at a big Christmas meal or something like that. It happens when I'm at a wedding sometimes. Rather than being put with my family, I'll be put on the table of people who still think of who are like we're still the kids, even though I'm nearly 40 and the rest of them like in their 30s or whatever. And it's quite a funny feeling. I quite like it. I didn't like it when I was young and I ended up on the kiddie table, but I do like it now, which is weird. I like being at the kiddie table.
Oh, God. We should stop.
We should move on.
What about you, Nick? Other than.
What films? Yeah. It's all been pretty much films. Lots of Angry Birds in Space. I've got goals
in that.
Isn't
that good?
I really like it. I've been playing it for a while, but I've really been going after getting all of the stars in everything.
Hard not to be a completist, isn't it?
And I've been buying stuff on Amazon. I've been buying lots of stuff, lots of books. I have been buying... Fantastic Four. It is strictly speaking comics, and we're not talking about comics yet, but I have been buying that because basically James was absolutely right. I dipping into Jonathan Hickman's run didn't really work out, but I bought the first one, read it, and now I just have to have all of it. So that's a bit terrifying.
You've no idea how elated I am at the validation I gain from you saying that you like it. It really genuinely makes me feel much happier. I've got no right to feel happy. I had nothing to do with the creation of that comic book at all.
If you hadn't fucking gone on about it so damn much, maybe. Though, I wouldn't have picked it up. So you can feel some validation.
I don't know how much praise it has received, but whatever it has. I don't read very much about it, and it vexes me.
It's good.
It is fucking awesome. Brilliant.
I just remembered I did do something. This is really awful. It was my brother's birthday at the weekend.
Your brother's weekend at the
birthday? Yeah. And I met up with him Sunday and gave him his presents, and he was very happy with the graphic novels that I bought him.
Bizarre.
Remind us again what you bought him.
Did Superman All-Star. I didn't get all of the Superman All-Star. All-Star Superman. I keep doing that. All-Star Superman. I didn't get him all of them. I thought I had.
You're just getting the first one.
God, I've got them a while, yeah, so I'm going to buy him the other ones and just send them to him.
No, get him the other one for Christmas.
No, I'll get them now, because I've only given him half a story.
What else did you get him?
Batman, Death in the Family.
Awesome.
Yeah. He was actually, he'd read a bit about it, so he was quite pleased, so I got that for him.
Are you happy now, James? You've poisoned another generation.
Yeah, I've been validated a fuck tonight. It's brilliant.
He went to London for a couple of days with his friend and kept getting asked...
And kept getting asked
the hotel that he was staying in. There was a lot of older American couples there, and they really took to them. And people kept asking my brother if he was a ballet dancer.
Why?
Because he's very tall and thin.
Oh, he hasn't got a massive leg in the front of his trousers.
But he found it quite amusing, and they didn't see it quite... as funny. James, will you stop?
James, you have to stop doing
penis?
That now.
All right.
I have decided.
Okay.
James is that child from Back to Future 3.
Yeah.
Was it Back to? Was that? Did that happen in
on
that
the train? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Pointing Ooh, trains to his. Are set.
pointing to, you know, motioning his mother and pointing to his willy to say he needs a wee.
Trains are sexy, though. I'm not surprised that he became penis-obsessed on a train. I like them.
And they're jiggly, aren't they? They bouncy up.
Yeah, they work your bladder, and then later on they work your libido.
Lovely.
Work your libido.
Sounds like a perfect night.
Yeah, we should stop talking about this. We are Momcast. We are going to start talking about comics in a second because that's kind of what we do. If you want to, when we're not talking, when we're not drivelling on about nonsense.
Is this to brace yourself for about to talk about comics?
Yeah, yeah.
You're putting on a nice big buffer now.
You can talk to us about comics or tell us what you think of us and the show or contribute to the show with questions or bits or audio contributions of 2 to 5 minutes via email. Our email address for everything is
momcast@gmail.com.
You can also talk to us on Twitter. We're all on there quite a lot. I'm on there probably more than the other guys. Yeah. James is shaking his head.
I'd only follow me at the moment if you just want to follow someone who just occasionally hops on, rants, shouts, says the C word and leaves.
And follow me if you want retweets of preschool gems, because that's all I seem to do. That's basically what you're doing at the moment.
But anyway, so that's James Mom.
James Mom. I'll get my mojo back eventually, yeah. I promise.
And Jane Mom.
And Nick Site, that's with an X, because I'm cool.
You are.
And an SIGHT, because I'm fucking awesome. And there's also John Mom, without a H. It's written down on the site somewhere. The site is momcomics.com, and there are links there to us on Google Plus and on Facebook and on Tumblr, where depending on whichever of those social networks you are most excited by. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can leave us a comment on iTunes, and apparently it's nice if you do for us. Yeah. It's nice to it makes feel
what I love.
Or tell us why we're rubbish.
Either or.
To be fair, certainly James and definitely me, the whole self-loathing thing is ingrained. So you'd be doing us a favour if you told us we were shit, because we kind of believe it already.
Don't validate them, listener. We would just agree with them.
Yeah, but it'll make us feel good.
Let them know how good they really are.
We've secretly known it all along.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway.
Anything nice, not with us about.
So, all that said, should we talk about comics?
Yes, James, you're up first.
I'm going to talk about two Dynamite-y books today.
Oh dear.
What?
Dynamite-y.
Teehee.
Why?
First
What's
one.
Teehee?
It's a song.
First one.
By the artist.
First one.
Oh, formerly known as Prince.
Miss Dynamite-y. First one I'm going to talk about is Rated Mature at $3.99. It's issue 17 of Jennifer Blood. The first six issues, of course, were written by Garth Ennis.
Yes.
Subsequently written by Al Ewing and illustrated by Cuba Ball.
I like Cuba Ball's name.
I think
it doesn't do what I expect it to.
It doesn't, but it's lovely. I think when we last spoke about this book, originally the first couple of arcs were about Jennifer Blood taking revenge on her gangster family, which she did. A couple of cops got caught up in a crossfire, one of whom got quite badly injured, one of whom got even more badly injured, in so much as he died.
That's pretty bad.
Is there such a thing as a
fatal? That's fatal, I think.
When you think about it, I've heard the term fatal injury before, but it doesn't make any sense, does it?
His condition's stable.
True. But an injury by definition is like a something that you survive, isn't it?
I get no.
Isn't it? Does it specifically mean
fatal injuries? Is a phrase I have heard.
Yeah, no, I know. But
I think
doesn't
that means you die from your injuries rather than just dying straight away.
Die from natural causes after getting injuries many years previously.
Natural causes being you stop breathing. Everything is kind of natural causes.
Well, I think it's more about a ceasing of brain activity rather than breathing. You can stop breathing and not die. But
no, that's true.
No, don't, James, breathe.
Please breathe, because you are in the middle of a review.
My brain activity continued
it's
while
going,
I was not breathing.
Breathe.
Oh, I feel very lightheaded now.
When you say continued, you mean persisted at the level that it was previously going at?
I think that's what I was going for.
Okay, cool. We're just trying to establish a baseline on what normal brain activity is for you.
So the storyline subsequent to that has been Jennifer dealing with the fallout from the little slip-up she might have made along the way. The last issue was huge, which creates a almost crippling effect in this book. I didn't necessarily expect it to go where it's gone. It's heart-wrenching, sickening, and awful all at once, but beautifully written, beautifully drawn. It's a fascinating study of someone, a psychopath, truly showing their colours. It's fascinating.
Are you reading it as well,
Tom? I am. I love Jennifer Blood, and the story I thought would... I was thinking about getting it in trade instead of weekly, because the story collects so well.
Yeah.
But it's just a flipping drug. Every month I'm like, well, I need to buy the next one. So after the next one, or next arc, and then it's just before I know it, I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep continuing to collect this every month.
I think it's a finite run. I'm not sure where it ends, but it feels like there can't be a whole lot
more. No, and I accidentally spoiled this issue for myself, because I still need to catch up on the last issue.
Yeah, that was very foolish.
I know. I thought I'd read it.
Al Ewing's done such a great job, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Really, really good. Lovely to see him writing in this medium. It's Jane's right, it will collect fantastically. It's a really fascinating little... it's a horror.
Yeah, it is a
essentially.
Horror.
But yes.
It's not a crime story.
It starts off as a crime story.
Now it's a horror.
Now it's a horror, I think. Maybe it's a... I don't know.
I spoiled... Just remembered something about my week. Today I spoiled something for someone. I had my first... Big British Bake Off conversation at work today.
Are you watching?
I've been sucked in. I wasn't. Amy's been watching it, and I've been sneering in the background. Oh, but they're all so... It's like a programme with members of the public, but they're nice.
Yeah, I know.
How did that happen? That never happens.
We record it the watch when Jane comes over on a Wednesday.
Because I like it too.
So they were
and they make
about...
really nice things as
do you
well.
Want, do you want the older dude to win?
No, well, you see, I find them all lovely. Mm. I love the older dude, and I find them all lovely, but the young mum is also, I find her very attractive, and she's so sweet, and you kind of expect her to be dizzy.
Is that the larger lady?
Yeah.
No, the little
blonde
lady. And you expect her to be a bit dizzy, because she sounds a little bit sort of sweet. And I can't remember her name. She's like...
The little blonde lady who's brunette.
She might be brunette.
Yeah.
Oh.
I thought of her as blonde. I don't know why.
No, because there's another young...
She comes across as ditzy, but actually there's a dark heart.
I didn't know if there was a dark heart, but she's really good, is the thing. They're all really good, but you kind of expect some of them to mess up more than they do.
Have you watched this week's?
Yes, I... this week was Strudels.
Yes.
It was, yeah.
Listener, if you haven't watched it, stop listening now.
Cool.
The one who flung the dough on the floor.
That was hilarious.
That's the one you're talking about.
Yeah,
though.
I loved her.
Oh, right, okay.
She's definitely a brunette, isn't she?
Yes, she's
probably
brunette.
Is. She's got like a little pixie
like
cut
the
or something, hasn't she?
We like the blonde mum, don't we? The one who cries a bit, but it's not. She's funny.
Oh, is
funny.
She older?
No, she's
the
younger.
She's lovely as well.
Yeah.
I like her.
She's so sweet as well.
But she's the one who made the other one throw the pastry. Which
no,
she
didn't
do it on purpose.
She showed her technique, and brunette woman... She wasn't actually paying attention to what she was doing. She was only holding like a tiny bit of the dough, and that's why it flying. It's her own fault. The other girl's helping her. No, I was being defensive because she felt
Nick's
so
upset because you're having a go at his girlfriend.
No, James.
Well, I was blaming my girlfriend.
How are we being more aggressive about it than the people on the show were? That's
because
not the way
that's
TV.
That's the world we live
that's
in.
That's not the way TV
I don't care
is
about
these days.
I like the old dude. There is nothing about that old dude that doesn't delight me.
I like him. He is nice. Mm. I don't think you can just stick a lattice on everything and expect people to like be won over by it, though.
I don't think he sticks a lattice on everything.
I've only seen it properly 1 week.
Fuck you.
It's been on in the background over the last few weeks, but this week I actually ended up sitting down. I could no longer keep my distance away from the TV and pretend to Amy that I was vaguely sneering at her watching a show about baking. Because, and I kind of love Mel and Sue a little bit.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. I always have done, yeah. but yeah. it's difficult to ignore. Anyway, sorry, your other comic, James.
Dynamite, issue 5. Rated teen at $3.99 is The Shadow, which is written by Garth Ennis. It's the penultimate issue of the current story that sees The Shadow. I was almost calling him Charlie Adlard. Kent. Well, let's call him Kent Brockman. I can't remember his name.
Is he the same Kent, Shadow Kent that something. He's always been?
Yeah, as created by Walter B. Gibson. Finds himself. It's funny, actually, you mention Apocalypse Now, because the story's kind of been Heart of Darkness. They've been on a river in Japanese occupied China for the last 4 issues, where he's been following these ne'er-do-wells from the Chinese army down the river because they're off to get their hands on what I believe is uranium, which is no good. He can't have that.
That is no good.
But their ship was attacked in the last issue. Shadow obviously escapes because he's a wily Mother Hubbard and uses his shadowy skills to find out where the Chinese are going and what exactly it is they're after, which is good. It's all good, rollicking, romping sort of adventure stuff, which really is the point of why I wanted to talk about it, is I had certain expectations picking up a Garth Ennis book. I kind of expected this to be somewhat more violent, although it is violent.
Well, because it's pulpy, though, yeah. but it's violent. It is.
And you're right, it's pulpy violence, but it's so true to its origins. It feels like a 1940s sort of B, or 1930s, I guess, sort of B movie kind of adventure serial, sorry, is what I'm...
Hmm.
It feels very much like an old-fashioned adventure serial, which I'm absolutely loving. It's got a lovely atmosphere to it, beautifully written, with absolutely gorgeous art, which again is very in keeping by Aaron Campbell, which has that very sort of pulpy...
Hmm.
I want to say old-fashioned, but that sounds so disingenuous.
It's quite realistic-ish.
Yeah.
Like, I am... lots of shadow and light and stuff.
But with lovely, larger-than-life characters, you know, that the Japanese general and his assistant are being escorted down the river by this sort of Chinese chieftain type with this massive, overblown character. The Japanese... characters are very sly, very devious characters, very sort of archetypical bad guys in this sort of film. And obviously The Shadow is this wonderful, enigmatic, mysterious character that it's just so full of intrigue and adventure. It sort of reminds me of the sort of adventure books that I like to read when I was younger myself, and sort of, you know, very much like, you know, your Flash Gordon serial dramas from, I guess they were the 40s, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean...
The sort of thing that obviously inspired the sort of films I grew up enjoying when I was a little kid, Indiana Jones and Star Wars and so like. It's a real triumph, not really fully what I was expecting. There's no nudity, and no one says fuck.
Garth Ennis can be subtle, it's just not what people... want from him.
It's not what I'm used to reading from him at the moment, but it's just such a lovely book. As I said, and this is the penultimate book of this first arc, which means it will be collected very soon. Well worth seeking out in trade if you've not been picking up, I think.
Jane, what have you been reading this week?
This week I read issue 18 of Daredevil, available from Marvel, written by Mark Waid. What?
And all good bookshops.
Are we not doing that anymore?
No, I think that's fine.
And Chris Samnee and Javier. I always say this wrong. Javier Rodriguez. And the cover is by, I know because our friend Christine from the other Murdoch Papers has been raving about the cover.
Buy her tickets for Thought Bubble. She's cosplaying as Black Canary.
Oh, she confirmed she's going to go and cosplay then.
Well, she's getting a pregnant friend who's in her third trimester to make it for her.
You make it sound like she's forcing her.
That's what it sounded like on the Twitters the other day.
Oh,
I covered a long time. I did a lot of I felt I did a lot of water carrying there for you to find the...
Yeah, it's not on there, but it's...
Ice. It's only some... I'm going to have to start singing and dancing in a minute.
Yeah, I can't remember their name, and it's not on the insert.
Paolo Rivera.
Yeah, that's it. And it is an awesome cover. Yeah, I saw the... Yeah, on the front cover. Yeah, it's Matt Murdock and Foggy have still fallen out. But they've had to call upon each other a bit in this issue to help each other out. It's got its mojo back. I know that I've had, especially the random annual that came out as well, that I didn't really get. And as
annual.
Yeah, and it had a whole bunch of characters I didn't know or really care about. I'm like, what?
Yeah, the annuals I'm just going to avoid.
Yeah.
But all of the Marvel books.
The end of the last couple of issues of Daredevil have been a bit sort of not in sync. It's just, it's been a bit ruptured. And when you read this issue, you realise that actually, I think it's supposed to be like that. There's something going on. Things aren't what they seem. Really good issue. Really liked it. I really, still really like Daredevil.
Yeah.
I really like Daredevil.
I know.
I think his... I think the breakup between the two characters felt best handled in this issue than it had in the other three.
It had.
In the previous three, it just basically involved them both. It felt like it involved both of them flying off the handle in a way that was just kind of...
Well, I think it's... Sorry, carry on, Nick.
No, whereas at this point, it settled down to the point where they're just pissed off of each other.
Yeah,
Foggy's just pissed off with him.
Yeah, it's all been pretty erratic in this issue. You're led more to thinking, oh, actually, maybe not everything is as it seems, and you understand why the last couple of issues have been a bit all over the place and erratic. But I really, really enjoyed it, and Christine at the other Murdoch Papers has written a lovely blog post about it as well, so you should go and check that out.
I thought at one point you called him Dave Devil. I kind of like that. Dave. I want to read book.
As we are progressing, a cold has onset into my face.
I'm feeling a bit coughy as well.
Unfortunately, I donated my tissues to Life Partner Steve, who's also developed a cold today, so I'm having to hold my nose a bit.
Here comes Dave Devil, the man without a conscience. All right, twats! I'm Dave Devil!
You already decided he's an estate agent, haven't you?
Yeah. Sell cocaine BMWs!
Okay.
You are so much like Dave Angel, eco-warrior sometimes, it's unbelievable.
Oh, I'll take that as a massive compliment.
The next book I'm going to talk about is Lil Depressed Boy. By S. Steven Struble and Sina Grace. At $3.99 on Image. In all good bookshops. There you go,
James.
And some
shit ones too.
And some shit ones too, yeah. Issue 13. Lil Depressed, or LDB is recalling him.
Yeah, you know me.
LDB.
Lil's just almost impossible to pronounce, isn't it, on a regular basis?
Especially if you've got my accent. I just can't do it.
Or if you're a grown-up. I don't know.
LDB. His romance with his boss is blossoming.
He's a very special edition of blossoming.
He's still got a crap job, but he gets along with some of his co-workers. This book, I love it. I really do love it. The art's amazing. The story's so grippingly whimsy. You just want to hug it and give it pigtails. It's just...
Boy, yes you do.
But when you really think about it, there's not a huge amount that happens. It's just everyday stuff. But you are always rooting for LDB to find that love of his life, that red-haired hot girl that he's going to settle down with. But things always seem to just not work out for him. There's always a bump. There's always a reason why he can't quite get that happiness. Why he'll always be a little bit depressed.
It's lovely.
If we're honest, of all of the different moods or modes or mental health issues, depressed is kind of the one, a depressed character is kind of the one that you're going to get the least motion out of, isn't it? If he was, if he was a little psychotic boy or little adventurous boy, he'd be off doing stuff or murdering people. Mm-hmm. If you swap those around, not those aren't. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
But little depressed boy, depressed people don't tend to get up to all that much, really.
Certainly. There's a lot of apathy going on there.
Yeah, a lot of apathy.
It's a lovely book.
You love it as well, don't you?
I do, very much so. I think, Jane, as we've reached a watershed here, Jane, after, 154 episodes, has generated the best quote about any book ever reviewed. You just want to hug it and give it pigtails.
It is a wonder we're not on the backs of more comics or fronts of more
comics. It's only
comics.
Downhill from there.
Yeah.
You want to hug it, little depressed boy, you want to hug it and give it pigtails.
Maybe we've been building to this point. Mm. Maybe it is onwards and upwards.
I wish we had party poppers.
You just wish we had poppers.
I do.
Okay. Yeah.
I fell out of a window once because of poppers.
Did you? Did it go off quite loudly and make you jump?
No, I mean animal nitrate.
Oh, okay. Mm. Animal nitrate.
In mind.
Yeah, so I can't really top that now, can I? It's good. Buy it.
No, I prefer to
read
one.
It and enjoy it.
No, you've kind of shot your bolt, really, haven't you? It's a shame. It's good.
Yeah.
That wasn't me clearing my throat to try and get everyone to stop so I can talk about my comics. But it seems to have served that purpose. So I shall.
Nick, what have you bought this week?
2080-1801 has a really nice wraparound cover of the ABC Warriors by Clint Langley.
Yeah, really fucking nice, isn't it?
Have you read this yet, James?
Only Dread.
Right. Of the stories in this, I think that as much as it's odd for me to be enjoying Clint Langley's art this much, because I really do think this looks so much better than the stuff he does on Slain, I really, really like the art on this. It's a shame, because it's nice, but it's basically another Pat Mills story where he has characters talking about stuff that's happening rather than actually you seeing stuff that's happening, which we've kind of seen in other Pat Mills stories recently. I think Defoe starts moving, is one that moves really quickly because it's still quite a young series, but a lot of the other books that he does, a lot of the other stories, like, I guess, is it called Savage?
Oh, yeah, Savage with Patrick Goddard.
Yeah, and Flesh and all of those stories, they're mainly about characters talking about stuff that's happened and explaining their motivation for things rather than actually doing things, which can be okay, but it means that they all end up sounding like, it's like people standing around yelling at the reader a lot of the time.
I really wanted to defend Savage things. I love it so much, but you're...
It is beautiful,
right.
But it is like...
Yeah. I love the story as well. I love the bias,
It works well in Savage because that's a human story about people just like... It's naturally quite... Mm. It's not huge. It's not about like crazy robots or
dinosaurs. The best thing about Savage is the atmosphere he creates. Mm. You know, it's good.
Also, the Ian Edgington story, Ian Edgington and INJ Colbard story, Brass Sun, The Wheel of Worlds, second part of that. As I said last week, it's the most unusual thing we've seen in 2018 in ages. It continues to be beautiful. It's like epic fantasy world, but religious machinations going on. It's very exciting.
Although there are a few similarities apart from the fact they're both science fiction tales, did you find it gives you a similar, possibly just me, a similar feeling when you're reading it to Saga?
Yeah. It's kind of looks, the colour and the look of it is quite similar as well.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as inventive as that.
God, no. But it's got a vibe in common.
I think we're going to see a very, very traditional story of religious corruption and intrigue.
Yeah, yeah.
against a bizarre backdrop in this, mm-hmm. whereas Saga just keeps throwing stuff at you constantly, yeah, doesn't it? And it's lovely. Grey Area, I'm quite enjoying this time round. It's a story of diplomatic immunity in the world of Grey Area, which is quite good and interesting. And Lee Carter's art is beautiful.
It's lovely and clean, isn't it? I like it. But it took me a while to dial into it, but I really like it.
It's fine. That's good. I know you've read it. There's a Terror Tales in here called Black Spot, which is written by John Smith, who is one of my favourite writers, one of my favourite comic writers, especially in 2000 AD, with art by Edmund Bagwell, which is whose art is amazing, and we've liked him in other stuff. It's a suitably horrible little horror tale, but I won't talk too much about that because James hasn't read it. And there's a 2008, there's a Judge Dredd story, called Payback. It looks like the first part, although it doesn't say part one, unless it says it in the front. Yeah, it doesn't say part one. It looks like either the first part of... it kind of looks like the first part of a story about the guy who helped Dredd, you know, when he was taking over the, like, the block had been, the block had seceded.
The massive cannon on the top.
Yeah. And I didn't realise, I think he's supposed to be one of the clones, along with Rico Dredd, and I'm not sure, but one who decided to be a civilian. But there's a story about the repercussions of him helping Dredd, but going against some of the other judges in the process. Written by Michael Carroll.
One of the Marines, wasn't it?
Yeah. Written by Michael Carroll, who is, you know, pretty good, and with art by PJ Holden, which is lovely, but... In the print copy, in the print version of this, the printing on this Dredd story is really bad. It looks like, and I get the impression it was fine in the digital copy, in the digital version. It looks like it's maybe like printed at a resolution slightly too low, like a good resolution for digital, not a great resolution for print, which is a shame.
Probably too low, because I noticed it, and I'm...
And you're not as fussy as me.
I'm an
eye
idiot.
I mean, you're not full on watching widescreen films on a 3x4 TV though, are you?
No, not quite. No.
Or anything like that. Or going, well, I don't like widescreen because I lose the top and the bottom of my screen. Oh God, that's one thing I do not miss about working at Forbidden Planet when I did. Oh, that was musical. Somebody's doing something with bottles outside the house, definitely. And it was very musical.
They're rejoicing your 2000 AD review.
No, they weren't. They were celebrating your quote.
It's words getting round.
It took us a while to arrange.
You can still see that PJ Holland's art's good. It's just a shame that it was a bit rubbish, like the print job on it. And also, I had it in the kitchen with me, and I must have left it in something like wet, a puddle of something on the side, and so my back cover's a little bit rumpled, which I'm quite sad about.
You've got a rumpled back cover.
Revival issue 3, written by Tim Seeley with art by Mike Norton. Jane hasn't had a chance to read this yet, and I don't want to say too much about it beyond to say it continues to be very interesting. It's the story of a small town beset by weirdness and people coming back from the dead in a weird way, hence the name Revival.
Apart from that normal way they normally come back from the dead,
coming back as zombies, which is the normal way. They're not particularly zombie-ish, except that sometimes they are.
I can't believe we live in a world where zombies are normal.
I need to go back and read the first two issues, though. This is the first issue where I felt like... maybe it wasn't as tight as it could be, and I think what's actually happened is I've forgotten some of the different storylines that are going on, so I was a little bit confused by what was happening in scenes, and that's because I didn't really remember the characters as well as I should have. That's reader error I'm talking about there, listener. I also can't believe we're in a world... we're in a world where zombies are normal, James. Mm. I can't believe we live in a world where I... and buying 2 Godzilla comics monthly.
Hot diggity dog.
I don't like Godzilla.
Which monsters are in this month's Godzilla
Apparently
comics?
Do.
In
He loves Godzilla.
I keep my fingers crossed for Godzuki this month.
In Godzilla, the eponymous book.
Yes.
That's a good word, isn't it?
It is a good word.
Number 5, $3.99, written by Dwayne Swierczynski with art by Simon Gain. the extra monster who has a little badge on the front cover and also is on the front cover.
Oh, yeah.
Is Mechagodzilla.
Oh, sweet.
The story still continues to follow Boxer and his team as they try and destroy the monsters. This is a pretty bleak world in both of these Godzilla comics. You're basically getting this very clear sense that the monsters are basically a force of nature. You can distract them, but you can't stand a chance of killing them or getting rid of them. Boxer is still trying to... and his team are still trying to take down the monsters. They're still charging the government an awful lot of money to be able to do it. And there's a sense in this issue that some of the governments are starting to rebel. Some of the authorities are starting to rebel a little bit against being held hostage as they see it. But at the same time, against the backdrop of this, there is a character who is an American industrialist, I guess, an American entrepreneur called Daniel Malman, who is basically Richard Branson.
Oh, so he is.
Yeah. There's a suggestion, he's a bit more bombastic and American than Richard Branson, but there's a suggestion that he decides the governments aren't really interested in doing something, so he's going to do it. So he's taken some x-rays that they got of Godzilla while he was trapped under a mountain at one point, and he's built a gigantic metal robot. But there's a bit of rivalry there and a bit of a problem there where he just goes in cack-handedly. He is in the giant robot. He goes in cack-handedly and tries to kill Godzilla, and Boxer isn't very happy about it because he's already there and his plans all get stomped over. But that continues to be beautiful. Simon Gaines' art is amazing, and Dwayne Swierczynski keeps it moving really, really well. I'm enjoying that. And then James Stocco continues with the second issue of Godzilla the Half-Century War. The only badge on the cover is Godzilla, but there's actually the... I can't remember what it's called, but he's kind of like a big, like, porcupine-y monster in it. This is the comic that is about a guy who has been fighting Godzilla since... who's been... part of a Godzilla fighting force since he first encountered Godzilla not long after World War II, when Godzilla first surfaced. But basically, it's an opportunity for James Stocco to take us to a bunch of different points in history and draw the hell out of them. In this story, it's the middle of the Vietnam War with the attendant, because the main character in this is from Japan. And so he goes in with his squad trying to stop Godzilla from, like, reaping havoc across Vietnam. But the American forces are already there, and there's rivalry between the American guy decides he's going to go in with shock and awe and try and destroy Godzilla. James Stocco's art is perfect for drawing the rice paddies of Vietnam? Mm. And all of the explosions and all of the craziness. I am really enjoying it. I don't know. Again, I think it's going to be a mini-series, and I'm quite glad of that, because it's not something that... It's not got that much substance for... there's not that much substance for you to be getting. I think the whole book, when you get it all, is going to be this amazing, like self-contained story with amazing art and stuff like that, but I'm not reading it thinking that's a meaty, like, purchase. Art-wise, it is. There's loads to look at, but story-wise, it's basically, like, Monster Fest. Anyway. Which isn't bad in itself. And one thing I didn't realise was coming back this week, so I nearly missed it, is Stumptown from Oni Press, $3.99, issue 1. Stumptown, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case. Written by Greg Rucker, who is a favourite of mine, with art by Matthew Southworth, who I believe is the same chap who drew it last time. I'm not sure. But it is lovely. It's the story of... I can't even remember her name, which is terrible. It's because I haven't visited with her for such a long time. The lady who runs... Stumptown Investigations, Dex Parios is her name, and she's a PI. It's basically a PI book, and in this story, it looks like she's actually set up. She previously worked out of her home. I believe she's got an autistic son or something, which is a bit of a character point. She's pretty headstrong. She's pretty, I'm trying to think what the word is, idealistic, honourable, I think, even though that doesn't necessarily make her any money. And we see that because she turns down a job. She turns down a job that's offered to her at the beginning of this because of the backers of the company that she'd be working for. But the crux of this story is the case of the baby in the velvet case. The baby is actually a guitar. There's a rock star at the beginning of it. We get to meet the various members of this band, and then one of them turns up to the offices of Stumptown Investigations and says that her guitar's gone missing, her favourite guitar's gone missing, and she needs our investigator, our hero, to find it. And so that's all quite intriguing and quite interesting and quite sort of classic PI fiction, which is pretty cool. But then there's also the plot thickens when she chases down her first lead and finds some crazy skinheads, and you get to see how much of a badass she is when faced down by some guys who are clearly have the drop on her. She's awesome. I think the first series sort of started with her at gunpoint down by a river and it didn't look great. She is a badass, and like my favourite sorts of heroes in noir and crime noir fiction and stuff like that, she takes a beating. That sounds pretty weird, but what I mean is, it's like
she can hold her own.
She doesn't just go into situations and rule over them, though. You know that there is a very big chance that she might get the crap beaten out of her at some point, which I think is the reason why the first Die Hard movie is so much more effective than all of the other Die Hard movies, because there's very much this feeling in that first film that he's getting the crap beaten out of him through this thing. He's very human, and that's the thing. Greg Rucker writes amazing characters. A lot of those characters happen to be female. He writes very good female characters, and they are very human and very vulnerable, while also being incredibly cool.
Isn't it nice that women have a nice man who writes so well for them?
I was very careful about the way I put that, so that you or anyone else couldn't say that. The truth is, I don't think he sees it that way. He just happens to write good characters, but a lot of them happen to be women.
Let's start the whole female creators in comics conversation, though.
No, that's not.
There should be more, but Greg Rucker's awesome.
Oh, for fuck's sake. so that's all the weather.
Carol?
What's been happening this week? Champs, comics-wise.
I have an announcement.
Oh, God.
I've been handed a piece of paper.
You have been handed a piece of paper.
From the Happy Cheese. Lyndhurst Road in Ashurst. It's excellent. I recommend it.
That's our sponsors,
food.
Yeah.
And this message says, Graham Johnson will be at the Bristol Comics and Zine Fair.
I think that isn't what it says. I think what it says is
Graham Johnson, Bristol Comics and Zine Fair. That's what it says.
I assumed you'd read the email, James.
Graham Johnson would like you, cordially invites you.
Concentrate on the second bit.
Bristol Comics and Zine Fair.
Don't just say it.
Well, I don't know. Do you want me to say it?
Apparently the Bristol Comics and Zine Fair is happening, I believe, this weekend in Bristol. We'll put a link to it on the site. Graham Johnston, it was the one who very kindly told us about it, and I believe he may be there. He is a drawer that we know.
Well, if he's not there, is there any point going?
You completely... No, what was the other one? Exhaust. You had me at shut the fuck up.
Graham Johnson has some sort of link to the Bristol Comics and Zine Fest. We're not sure what that link is at this point. He knows about it. We know that much. We'll come back to you with any developments later on in the show. Click the link.
Also, London Super Comic Con, which is happening in...
London,
in the new year, in 2013. Wow!
If there's a 2013,
if 2013 happens, I'm sure it will.
We're not just over that now.
No, it's still 2012, Jane. Plenty of time yet.
I think it's. It looks like here that it's happening 23rd and 24th of February 2013. If we're all still here in 2013, but. They have started announcing their guests in advance of that. I think we've had the first week or 2 weeks of guests.
Yes.
And the first two guests that I've really paid attention to, although there are more than just these people, are Neil Adams, ooh, who is a classic like comic creator who has kind of created the template for how characters like the X-Men and Batman would come Batman, to be drawn. Is going to be there. But also Peter David, who is the one that I'm really excited about because I love him. He has written some amazing runs on comics such as The Hulk several years ago and X-Factor, and he's still writing X-Factor now. He's very good at these. He's one of the people. He's one of the people who basically created this idea that you could do really long and smart, character-driven runs on a comic book that you didn't just have to do small arcs. You could do really long ones and them still be worthwhile. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be there, and those are the first couple of people that they've like really made a big deal about. So I don't know who. Who they're building up to, or you know, maybe they've started with the really good ones,
and David it'll all Wynn be downhill from Johnson. That.
I think David Wynn's going to probably be there anyway. Maybe
have they not announced that yet? They should.
Should mention as well that I do know one of the organisers, so you know, it just should mention. I don't think there's a conflict of interest in mentioning it.
We have signed the disclosure forms, yeah, haven't we?
Declaration of interest.
We've signed all that. It's fine.
That's all logged with the podcast authority.
Yeah. That's right. Yes.
You were category B, whereas James and I are category A. Yeah, so that's fine.
Other conventions are available. Yeah. They just won't be as good.
Last year's show was really good, though. I think we can say that without really. Stretching credibility too much.
No, it was awesome. An excellent show. Yeah.
Stan Lee's still talking about it now.
We are obviously very excited about Leeds, though. Well, certainly I am, and I'm sure Jane is. Leeds Thought Bubble. It's just, I think they've announced most of the awesome people who are going to be there, so it just remains for us to attend. Now,
and make the painful decision around hotels, which
that
I think,
is a painful.
I think
decision.
I'm just going to ask you afterwards.
Okay, that sounds.
We'll do
good.
Word association. We'll see which hotel you come back
Does
with.
Does James know what's happening?
No.
Okay, well, never mind then. You had one more thing.
Maybe we'll put a link in the show. It's a really good interview with Grant Morrison on the lovely Lefty New Statesman website this week. Where he talks about bringing to an end his association with caped spandex-clad heroes, DC, and talks a little bit about Happy and various other bits and bobs and fan entitlement. And all
Does
sorts
he talk
of
about
things.
That?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
And all of which not particularly controversial, makes good sense.
I haven't
Clearly
read...
being interviewed by someone who's fond of him, but there's certainly nothing to be... No controversy to see there at all, I think.
I haven't read the article.
But you've read some articles about it.
So I'm not entitled to an opinion. James has already made that very clear before the podcast. So I'll say nothing until I've actually read the article.
But to be fair, me being me, I've read the article, can barely remember a thing about it. So actually, you just knowing about it, you probably actually already know more about it than I do.
But if it turns out that James, with that little review of the interview, is just being a simpering... sycophantic fanboy himself, you can bet I'm going to take him to fucking task about it next week.
Tune in next week. While you're on the New Statesman website, I really recommend the Will Self articles on there. They are a delight.
Mm-hmm. I like him.
His restaurant review of Garfunkel's is just fucking joyous.
I like him. I like that he uses words that I have to look up.
I always do that. I'm always disappointed if I read a Will Self article and I don't have to look a word up. I'm always disappointed. But no, he does, obviously, does restaurant reviews and he takes his son to a Garfunkel's.
Will Self has a son?
I think he has a couple of sons, yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed.
Heroin makes you virile.
I'm always amazed that he can stand up, let alone do anything else.
Oh, it's just such a happy waking experience. Not heroin, the reviews.
Something else. Yes, there was something else. You should go and see Dread. You should definitely try and go and see it 2D, because the 3D is sometimes distracting, and apparently gives cinemas the excuse to do whatever the fuck they like with the pricing. But it is really good. It is a properly... It's probably the most violent film I've seen at the cinema recently. But it has a real... It takes all the right aesthetic cues from places where it should. So there are moments where it feels like Blade Runner, but not in the design of the city, just in kind of the street level stuff a little bit. It takes a lot of cues in the music and in the direction from John Carpenter's like late 80s films like Escape from New York and Assault on Precinct 13. There's a lot of that in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the soundtrack has that kind of feel to it. It's very sort of modern, but it has this real 80s feel to it as well. It's kind of weird. It's not a particularly deep film, and it doesn't try to do anything beyond just be a really good, a little bit exploitative, which is quite good, sort of violent action movie, action thriller. What interested me, though, is I think that the megacity in the earlier film, the earlier Judge Dredd film, looked more like the comics. But I think the one in this film feels more like the comics. And I realise that that's a lot more important. What's weird about it is I don't think I ever expected to see a megacity that still looked vast and like the remains of what happens when all of the cities end up joining together after a nuclear war. And it actually be plausible, and it feels weirdly plausible. I like it. Really good film. Really cool. Good. I enjoyed it.
Do we know what Graham Johnson thought of it?
I don't.
Okay.
It's about an hour and a half long as well, which is quite... refreshing for a film. I don't think The Fall is that long either. I think that there's nothing wrong with a film being under 2.5 hours, it turns out. Mm. Hollywood, take note.
So how did you enjoy Apocalypse Now?
Oh, it's good.
Sorry, go on, Jane.
It's good.
It's okay for the odd film to be a classic to be 2.5 hours.
I was just calling
long.
Back to that, because obviously we were talking about a very, very long film. I'm not.
Also, do you guys like Stephen Fry?
More than you, I think.
Because you know, I'm a bit grumpy about him now. Mm. So I just want to check this thing I thought last night. Is even when I liked Stephen Fry, the thing I thought about it, because we were talking a little bit about him being cast in The Hobbit. Someone like who was with us, Oki, I think, mentioned it. And I said, well, I mean, if you put Stephen Fry in a film, you're already kind of acknowledging you don't really want him to act. You just want him to be Stephen Fry in your film. And I didn't think that was particularly... I just think it's a thing. He's never anyone but Stephen Fry in a film, is he? So basically we're just going to see Stephen Fry as a hobbit or whatever it is he is in it. Is that fair? Have you ever seen him really?
I'm desperately trying to think of him.
Jeeves and Worcester,
is he different in that? And is he in Wild as well? Is he very different in that?
Oh, God, no, that was an excellent performance as well.
Because most of the films I've seen him in, he's basically...
You're being a little unfair, I think.
Well, V for Vendetta, he's basically Stephen Fry. And all of the other films I've seen him in.
Okay.
Peter's Friends, he's basically Stephen Fry.
He is, yeah.
And I'm struggling to imagine that them expecting him to be really method in The Hobbit.
What's he playing?
I don't know. Something, right. A Stephen Fry...
an Oxbridge Flopsy.
Yeah, I imagine there's a place for that in Tolkien's Middle Earth.
Almost certainly.
And Tolkien's racist Middle Earth.
With its dark men.
James.
It's still pissing me off that they missed the real racism in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's there, you can find it. It's not where you think it is if you're an idiot.
This is where we liberals always go wrong, isn't it? It's, we can't even agree on which racism it is we should be arguing.
We should probably move on to something where there is no racism at all.
Ever, ever.
Definitely not in this book.
You're going to do your spotlight, James.
Asterix in Great Britain. I actually almost went straight into reading verbatim from the Wikipedia page. This week I'm going to talk about Asterix in Britain, which is lovely. The end. first published, obviously, in Pilot magazine, as were all the others, in 1965. First became collected in 66. And it was an early one in England, got its English translation in 1970. Not content with conquering all but one village of the Gauls, Julius Caesar decides that he's going to take on the pesky Britons who offer succour and support to the Gauls from time to time. This particular book opens with the pirates.
You love them.
We do love the pirates. Everyone loves the pirates. Who are on the Mare Britannicum, the English Channel, looking for some victims and also keeping an eye out for those pesky Gauls when they are engulfed by a fleet of invading Roman ships. So Britain is taken. All of Britain is taken? No,
no.
Not all of Britain is taken.
I remember this one, vaguely.
One village still holds out in Cantium, and their chief... My Kingdom for an Horse.
That's good.
And his trusty psychics, Anticlimax and Mechanics.
Anticlimax is perfectly British.
Yeah. Anticlimax is our hero. That's it. The two sidekicks for My Kingdom for an Horse are very optimistics and mechanics. That's it. They decide that they can't hold out for much longer on their own and... Asterix and Obelix, or Asterix, who is Anticlimax's cousin, is pressed into action to come and help them. So there's a brief scene in Asterix's village where obviously Anticlimax turns up, meets Asterix and Obelix, and there's some very, very funny wordplay. Because there's differences, you see, between the Britons and the Gauls. There's differences.
Are there?
And... when Asterix offers Anticlimax some boar, goat's milk and beer, he just wants a cup of hot water. That's all he wants, a cup of hot water would be fine.
I already remember this, that's right. Where this goes.
So and the whole way through, they like a cup of hot water. So, anyway, I lost my train of thought in quite a simple story there. I've got to ask myself... some serious questions, if only I had the vocabulary to ask myself questions, which I don't.
You need to have a good long talk with yourself.
I don't think I can sustain a good long talk with myself. Can I have a mediocre short talk with myself?
Follow your bliss, buddy.
I gotta. So they're given a barrel of magic potion by Getafix, as well as some mysterious herbs that Asterix takes with him as well. Dogmatix is left at home. This particular
we don't version. Like dogs in Britain.
Although, in the radio adaptation, which was translated and written by Anthea Bell and narrated by the late lamented Willie Rushton, which is why I was feeling the inside of my leg, Dogmatix does travel to Britain, or is it the film version?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
It's one or the other. So they set out, and on the way, they get an opportunity... to beat the shit out of some Romans who are travelling back
of
from
course.
Britain, which is joyous. But they give the game away as they're fighting the Romans by mentioning their barrel of magic potion.
Oh.
So the Romans, despite taking a right shellacking, decide to head back to Britain to warn the Roman authorities there that there's some Gauls with a barrel of magic potion heading... back their way. So they arrive on English shores and Asterix and Obelix head to a pub called the Jolly Boar where they settle down to some of the English specialities that they can enjoy while they're there. A mug of lovely frothing warm beer,
mm-hmm.
and some boiled pork in boiled boar.
What?
Boar.
Boar.
Boiled boar.
Not in boiled pork.
Of course, one of the main runners throughout this will be the English and their taste in food and drink.
Our food is so lame.
It is lame. And to be fair, in the 1960s, on reflection, when this book was written, they've got a fucking point. In fact, boiled boar in mint sauce is probably slightly nicer than what you could have expected to have received in most English pubs at the time. And obviously the warm beer is warm bitter. You don't have cold, but you don't chill bitter. Although there is a nice gag later on where they go to a pub and they're told that they serve all the specialities, warm beer and nice chilled red wine.
That's weird.
We were a less sophisticated culinary country back then, I think. I think we've become more cosmopolitan since then.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're almost 70% middle class now, aren't we?
Oh, almost, exactly. Although, weren't we always? One of the joys of this book is the fun that's poked at the Britons. It's all, as with all Asterix books, it's gentle, but because it's referencing a country that I've lived in for a while, it's even more funny.
I was going to say, do you think we appreciate it more because we're French?
Oui. Asterix and Obelix narrowly escape a group of legionaries in their decurion, who work out that the Gauls that they see leaving, they find out are the Gauls that have come to the country with the barrel of magic potion. Thus begins a chase, which leads to one of my favourite scenes in there that I think offers an idealised version of Britain that I think some people would like to believe exists. A rather extravagantly mustachioed Briton is tending to his lawn, noting that with another 2,000 years of loving care, that it should make quite a decent bit of turf, which is quite sweet. But Asterix and Obelix, trying to evade the Romans, gallop across his lawn, leaving quite a mess. But he has time to intercept the Romans, who he'd rather murder than allow to walk across his lawn in pursuit of, which I think sums up this country. Very nicely. They head for Londinium and the anonymity of the large city. And the governor hatches a plan to try and get the magic potion from them. So he sends his legions out to see. The governor is called Encyclopedicus Britannicus.
Do you think it is easier or harder to hatch a plan than it is to hatch a baby bird?
I think it depends on the plan and it depends on the bird. I think if it's a quick hatching bird, then the bird's easier.
Okay.
Because all you've got to do is sit there, you don't even have to think.
No, that's true. And maybe it's possible to hatch a plan while you're hatching a bird.
That would complicate the bird hatching because you have to think.
That's true. Earlier on you said someone was a ne'er-do-well, and that stuck in my head. I like that. Mm. Ne'er in that instance means never, doesn't it?
Yes.
But you never hear anyone say never-do-well. No. They were a never-do-well. No, it's always ne'er-do-well.
It's nice, that feels nice to say.
Ne'er-do-well.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, James, carry on.
Once they hit London, they come across a very exciting sight of girls going crazy.
Spring break!
It's not spring break. There's actually a very popular group of bards from the Bardic Charts.
Oh, their hair looks familiar.
And their faces look familiar. That one looks like that dude that effed up the opening ceremony of the Olympics.
And that
Boris Johnson.
Although less like a big frog that has died.
Oh.
And that one looks like a man who no longer wants people to send him letters telling him how good his drumming is.
They're bigger than Jesus. Mm. Wow.
Does one of them look like a wife-beating hypocrite?
That's right. And that person's saying, bigger than Jesus? Who's Jesus? And that person's saying, someone who hasn't been born yet.
is one of them saying, I'm not a mod or a rocker, I'm a mocker? That is my favourite Ringo Starr quote ever.
No.
It's even more my favourite than
Stop sending me
peace and love, peace and love. I hate you all, peace and love, peace and love.
Yeah. You were talking about John Lennon, weren't you?
Yes.
A minute ago. I was trying to work out which one to go. No, George Harrison seemed very nice.
I get
that. Oh, Lennon. That's it. They end up at the Jug and Amphora, a pub called the Jug and Amphora, with a barkeeper named Dipsomaniacs. Rather appropriately. And he hides his the barrel of magic potion in his wine cellar. Just so happens that Encyclopedicus Britannicus has sent his legions out to search such establishments, and they confiscate all of the barrels of wine, including the barrel with the magic potion.
Some bitch.
Somebody gonna get effed up.
They're going to get effed up in the A.
So they take it back to the governor's palace, and all the legionaries are tasked with testing the various bottles of wine. You can imagine how that goes. There aren't really enough legionaries, and they get effed up out of their faces.
They get.
There's quite a scene of debauchery here as our red-nosed legionaries start singing various traditional drinking songs from these aisles. And hilariously, though, one of them is completely bladdered right out of his face.
Mm.
Discovers a magic potion and beats the crap out of his
assistant. But he's already so drunk by that point.
Yeah, he's just blatting them.
That's funny as hell.
It is awesome. It's a really cute scene. It's one of my favourites. It's one of my favourites in the book. I also like the names of the various bar owners. So Haystacks, Tin Tacks, and Anthrax.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
Who I'm not sure I'd really want to drink anything in Anthrax's.
No, I think I would.
Maybe listening to a song if he was a bard.
Hmm.
So they travel through London, taking in the various sights. As Nick pointed out, one of the lovely sights is the double-deckered oxen-pulled cart.
Yeah, I love that. Big red double-decker.
But as Asterix points out, it's what a funny double-decker chariot.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it's goad-assisted two ox-powered numerous quarters run by Londinium Transport. It's very cute.
That's like several thousand years before Boris was in charge.
Yeah, but less full circle. Since Ken.
Full circle.
Oh, no, that's true. But he he'd be pretty good as a character in this, wouldn't he?
Boris would be awesome as a character in this. Asterix and Obelix make their way to the governor's palace, which is not particularly easy, not particularly complicated to get into, given that all of the guards are pissed out of their faces. they make their way down and they find Dipsomaniacs' wine barrels and steal them back. However, on their way back to Dipsomaniacs' bar, a now very drunk Obelix, because he's been testing the wine just to make sure
because he never really gets a chance to drink the magic potion.
He doesn't, but he drinks plenty of the wine, and I'm afraid to say, Obelix is a fearsome warrior, and not someone I would want to face in battle, but he's quite a lightweight when it comes to drinking.
He's worse.
And gets pissed out of his head really quickly. So on their way back to Dipsomaniacs, he spies a patrol and cannot resist diving into the Roman patrol and having a fight. Obviously, Anticlimax and Asterix go to help, but it leads to an opportunist thief taking the wine for himself.
Oh.
He is a rather marvellous sneak thief as well.
He is.
With a crooked nose, a big orange moustache and a rather marvellous domino mask.
You're a bit obsessed with moustaches today.
Well, they've all got moustaches.
That's true. But you're a bit obsessed with it today.
I am, yeah. And it's been a theme, hasn't it? The governor's obviously furious and sends his men out in hot pursuit again of Asterix and Obelix. And obviously Asterix and Obelix are furious that their barrels have been stolen. So they leave Obelix to sleep it off at Dipsomaniacs' pub while him and Anticlimax go to search out the thief. However, noting that it was just barrels from Dipsomaniacs' stock that were taken back, the Roman legionaries go to his pub and they literally raise it to the ground and cart him and Obelix off to the Tower of London.
Blimey, how are they? Because Obelix is off his face
sparked, still. Yeah, he sparks out and he wakes up very confused. with Dipsomaniac high up in the tower cell. Obviously, it's quite easy for him to get out once he does wake up. Leads to a hilarious set piece where Asterix arrives and works his way up, bashing the Romans, whereas Obelix is coming down, bashing the Romans all the way down. And obviously, then they swap places again, much to the chagrin.
Chagrin.
Because they're French. Of the Roman legionaries. Which is really cute. Dipsomaniac is able to give them some. Dipsomaniac is able to take them to another bar owner who is able to. Able to give them a lead on where the thief might be. He's called Sirtax. and so. They find a thief who then lets them know where he sold all of the barrels of the wine. They eventually track down the bar owner who had the barrel that must have been the magic potion, only to find that he sold it to one of the teams in the... where is it? Camelodium and... Duravernium are the two teams that are playing, and it's rugby. The Tribal Crown is what they're... So not the Triple Crown, the Tribal Crown is what they're playing in, which is a rugby match that's happening just outside of Londinium. Mm-hmm. And these rugby players, they need a barrel of wine to fortify themselves for the match. So Asterix, Obelix and Anticlimax head to the game. When they work out exactly where the barrel is, because one of the backs, one of the teams, is rather pummeled by the forwards. Mm-hmm. Carted off looking like he's done for the season. But then he's given some of this wine and tears off like the flash from him, barreling over rather humorously the forwards that were stamping his head into the ground some time before. Asterix and Obelix take to the pitch, followed by the Romans, who are at this point are in mufti, who rather live to regret taking to a rugby field. It's a really cute bit with Obelix charging through the forwards of one of the teams, knocking them over like they're tenpins.
And they say, "Oh, I say."
They do say, "Oh, I say." They're very proper and very polite the whole way through. They liberate the barrel of magic potion and escape by sea. However, the Romans are lying in wait and sink their boat with a single shot from the catapult mounted thereon.
Holy moly.
The barrel of magic potion is gone.
Shit.
And at this point, we've no idea whether our heroes have made it. What do you think, children?
Shit. I don't know. I'm more worried about... I think they're going to survive, but I don't know how the British will ever fight off the Romans.
Well, you're right, they do survive, and Asterix and Obelix and Anticlimax make it to the village. And they, like you, they think, shit, well, we've lost the magic potion, I've no idea how we're going to do it.
And then help.
Asterix remembers, well, I've got these special herbs in my pocket that Getafix gave me back in the village. Get a cauldron of hot boiling water, we put it in there, we drink that, you never know, that might give us some special powers. So, fortified by this magic drink that Asterix has created, the Britons come charging out of their village and they defeat the Roman army that is descending upon them. My Kingdom for a Horse is so happy. It says to Asterix, I don't know what that magic potion you made, that drink you made us was, what those herbs were, but I swear to you, we will make that our national drink from now on.
Hang on a minute. We drink leaves in water all the time.
Yeah, we do.
Well, some people do.
They're asking for boiling water all the time.
It just so happens that when we get back to the village, Asterix asks Getafix, what was that herb that you gave us called? And he says with a smile in the very final panel, tea!
Tea?
Asterix and Obelix introduced tea to Great Britain.
He must have got it from India, though.
He must have. He says at the beginning, it's far away. All through this book, there's lovely nods to the differences between us and the French. And they poke light fun the whole way through. at the Brits. And there is, if you'll indulge me a moment, a really lovely quote from the from René Goscinny.
Mm-hmm.
He says, regarding the stereotypes, as usual, we caricature what we are fond of, and we are fond of the British, in spite of that. Tolerate me reading this. It's very cute. I'm sorry. Would you like me to do it so it sounds more like him?
No, no, it's the fact that you still can't say caricature.
Caricature.
That's better.
As usual, we caricature what we are fond of. And we are fond of the British, in spite of their strange way of putting Nelson on top of their columns instead of Napoleon. However, when it comes to presenting this skit on the British to the British, we feel we owe them a word or two of explanation. Our little cartoon stories do not make fun of the real thing, but the ideas are the real thing that people get into their heads, i.e. cliches. And he goes on to say that the Gauls imagine the British talking a very refined way, drinking tea at 5 o'clock, which is what is their undoing in this book.
Yeah.
They knock off at 5 o'clock to have tea.
So
the Romans attack at weekends and after five.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And warm beer in the particular hours of opening time. The British eat their food boiled with mint sauce. They are brave, phlegmatic, and always keep a stiff upper lip. Suppose we were British, caricaturing the Gauls. We would say they all wore berets, ate frogs and snails, and drank red wine for breakfast. We might add that they have a hopelessly relaxed upper lips, and that phlegm is not their outstanding characteristic. Most of all, we should hope that Gauls would have as good a sense of humour as the British, which I think is very sweet.
That is very sweet.
And passive-aggressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, it is also quoted that whilst some of their books did solicit complaints from those they were poking fun, apparently they received none from the British after this. It is charming and gentle and lovely.
Because
and if nothing else, I think the British are quite good at laughing at themselves anyway. Yeah.
And the truth is most of us can't write, so we wouldn't be able to write them letters of complaint.
As with the few books that precede this, a really strong, and actually I'm finding I know I do the page by page with these, which we tend not to do, and you're very nice and you let me do that with Asterix. It's becoming increasingly complicated to tell you what's happening, and I've noticed it's taken me longer and longer to get through the books because there are deeper layers of storytelling. More happens. It's slightly less straightforward than before. I suspect you love this book. I love it a great deal.
I like it. I grew up with it.
I love it so much that somewhere, whether it's lost to the mist of time or not, there's a cassette tape. I spoke about the radio adaptation Anthea Bell did that was read by Willie Rushton. There is somewhere in existence, I believe, a tape of me attempting, I think probably as an 8 or 9 year old, attempting exactly the same thing.
You need to try and find that.
I think I got about two-thirds of the way through the tape. I remember not making a very good fist of it. And I remember doing the sound effects as well, which weren't very convincing.
Aww.
But it's a lovely book. It's fantastic.
I want to hear that.
I may or may not have it. I don't think I have, but I will find it. A big box of tapes down at the bottom of my garden in my workshop. So I'll see if it's in there. I doubt it, but I'll see. But yeah, lovely. A treat to read.
Excellent. It was nice to hear about. I like it.
Yes, it's really good.
What are you guys doing this week?
I'm off work now until Monday. I'm going to Peppity Pig World tomorrow.
Again, you love it.
I do love it. I'm very excited. And then I'm seeing my mum and her partner on Saturday, which is very exciting.
I have no idea, but I feel pretty rotten at the moment, so hopefully I won't be getting a cold.
Do you look at you on drugs?
And no, sleeping.
I don't know why. Zamo. I just feel really, really rough.
She doesn't look like Zamo.
Really should have just said no. I don't know, she looks a little bit like Danny Kendall.
Thanks.
I'm all about pesto. I'm making some homemade pesto.
Your kitchen smells gorgeous at the moment.
Really
that basil is amazing.
I don't know if it got picked up on the thing. I know Jane definitely heard it. My stomach has been making noises.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think I know it takes me a while. It feels like I'm doing it very quickly, but I was racing through that.
Oh,
I know,
so
I'm really hungry.
Homemade pesto, though, that's a good way to spend your weekend.
It's going
to
be awesome. Well, I'm making that tonight. We're away seeing the parents in all at the weekend, so that's good. Oh, I'm going to see a few people at the pub tomorrow night, but also our lovely friend Domi is down for the weekend, and she's going to be out on Friday, so that's good.
I could have got a chance to say hi, Domi, in person. That would be gutted.
Yeah, and you had your mouth full of water when I mentioned it just then as well. But anyway, so that's it. We obviously are quite hungry. As always, we thank you for listening, listener. You are awesome.
Thank you, awesome listener.
And that's it. We're out of here.
Bye.
Bye.